The date today is the 3rd of April, 2013. This is Eleanor Levine, and I am sitting with Merlin and Pierre Beekmans.
Beekmans.
That's the English pronunciation, yes.
At 76 Sussex. And you have been here since 1964.
Right.
Yes.
Thank you for allowing me to come to your home and meet with you. Thank you very much. Can you tell me, what made you choose to live here on Sussex?
What caused us to live here?
Yes. How did you choose Sussex?
Well, I had been living, in fact, on this street on the other side of Spadina. I'd been living in this area as a student. I also lived up on Kendall, just south of DuPont. And I was looking for a place to live after we got married. We lived for briefly on Palmerston, south of Bloor. I was looking at housing that was available. I just graduated in town planning, so I was interested in accessibility to downtown. I wasn't looking for the suburbs at all. And Merlin had the same general idea. She doesn't drive. I bought here because we found a slum, a very cheap house that we fixed up.
So you're describing it as a cheap house in a slum.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Good. I want to just be very clear.
I had to convince Merlin
it was
a good thing to do, buy a house for $10,000. But it was run down. But I spoke with the lady next door, an Italian immigrant, and her house was beautifully clean. And I asked her, would she mind if I showed my fiancé her house? Not that I was trying to convince Merlin that we could live here. And, right next door, she got...
So you wanted her to see the potential.
Well, that it could be quite clean and nice, and the lady was very pleasant, very nice, and she let us do that, that helped. It's one of the ways that Merlin was convinced.
She turned out to be
another was Howie
neighbor.
Edelman. Do you know Howie Edelman?
Yes, I do. That's who was living next door?
No.
That's another person who helped me convince. I had to convince Merlin to move into the slum, you see. And Howie, I got to know him at the campus co-op. He'd been our general manager for a year. And he came over and looked, I said, oh, yeah, this is a great place to buy,
I thought Pierre had maybe paid him something under the table because he was so optimistic about the possibility.
He's very positive.
Yes, very positive.
And he meant it, I think.
Yes, I think he did.
Could see the potential, so he backed me up.
Okay, I want to stop for a minute, Merlin, and have you describe, you use the word slum. How did you see the neighborhood, and what was it in 1964?
Well, it was a run-down neighborhood. I was just thinking the other day when Pierre mentioned that you wanted to talk to us. Remember, Harbert Street was full of shops that you didn't really know what they were selling. It was there was a dust in the display window, and you thought, what are they selling here, or what is it? There was a print shop that was just a mess. I remember that. I thought, I'd never take anything to be printed there. And most of the shops were like that. The one standout was the Harbert Bakery, which was terrific, of course. And over the years that we've been here, mind you, it's many long years, that whole area has changed completely.
And the Harbert Bakery has evolved too,
yes,
of course.
Yes, oh, with the times.
It used to.
So, okay, so let's just stay with the Harbert Bakery for a short time. What was it then? Oh, it was the best of the lot, but what was it? And you're saying it has evolved.
Well, it was a very good Jewish bakery, and we liked
good bread.
Good bread, very good bread. And Pierre is Belgian background, has come out. He likes good food, you know, in all its manifestations. So immediately we knew it was a good place, and it was a very friendly atmosphere. And we had our children after we moved in here, and they were so good with those kids. Oh, they were just so wonderful. Yeah. They just at one point when our son was an infant, he was crying when I went in, and some of the ladies behind the counter said, "What are you feeding him? He sounds hungry." You know, they looked at me, and here he was a big kid, a big baby, you know, so obviously it was feeding him enough, but they thought maybe something was the matter. A kid wouldn't cry like that. But then they found out that he was usually a very sunny baby. He'd smile at everybody in no time flat.
You know, that was still a Jewish bakery from the time when the area was largely Jewish. When we moved in, I think probably the predominant group was the Italian working class.
They came in.
So
and they,
by 1964, the Jewish people had moved north.
Pretty well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty well, all of them, yeah.
And like the people next door, for example, were Italians. And we had Jewish people on this side.
Yeah.
The first... I thought all Jewish people had a PhD. From my experience.
Very bright.
You know, like Howie Edelman's.
Yeah.
But... The husband there was very limited.
Yeah. In what?
His wife came once and asked if I would come over and change a light bulb for him.
Yeah. I mean, he just couldn't do anything. She was quite bright.
Yeah.
His wife was quite bright, and you know, they were good neighbors in many ways. Although Arthur, the husband, used to think that our son, who was a very energetic kid, he's, "I don't know what you're going to do with that kid when he's 17. Because this kid was just, you know, he stopped napping when he was a year and a half, and he was just a goer all the time. And if you took him out to the parks a couple of times a day, you'd be
She died first, right?
Yes, she
and
did.
He was left, and he couldn't look after the place, and it really got very,
messy.
Very dirty. And
It was too bad.
Okay, we're moving so quickly. I'm going to come back to Harvard Street, where Harvard Bakery stood out as the one decent place, commercial place, and the rest were dusty, neglected businesses of some sort.
And I don't think I ever bought anything in any of those places because they just looked so sort of unsavory.
There was Peretta's Pizza.
Peretta's Pizza, yeah, that was the one other place. Yes, which is, it's now,
you know where that is,
it used to be Messes, or it's changed its name, hasn't it? It's somebody else's?
Well, it has been Messes, and now another restaurant has just taken it. Messes closed about a month or two ago.
So they were the bright lights there, the on Harvard Street, but there were small shops. I remember even that lawyer's office there looked sort of dusty. Nobody hired a cleaner or whatnot. It just was not...
So Harvard was kind of shabby.
Yeah,
the whole street was shabby.
Yeah. I thought, at that point.
It has changed quite a lot.
It has changed a lot.
Another feature of the area here was the fact that we still had corner stores.
Yes.
You know, most of these corners.
We're on Sussex right now.
Yes.
Near Robert Street.
Yes.
Between Robert and Major. Where were the corner stores?
There was one on Robert Street and Sussex, right at the corner there, where Danny lives. That was one of them. And there was another one just across the street.
Where John Biggs lives was a corner store.
There were two there.
And I think the other one was in the area that's now the university land, where the rink is.
Yes, there was one there too.
There were still houses there, right? They were they tore them down.
On Robert Street, there were houses from... Where the playing field is. That was all
taken down.
Yes.
They were taken down very soon after we moved in, I guess.
Yeah, that was quite one of the issues I remember thinking that we should talk to you about it.
The east side of Robert Street.
Yes.
Okay.
And some big developer bought up all those houses, said, you know, what was going to happen, and they sort of coerced the people to sell. And they were substantial houses on the east side. They were not, well, rather like on the west
side. You remember them?
Yeah, I do. They were in good shape. Anyway, they took them all down, and then the people in the area didn't like the idea of two sort of skyscrapers going up.
Same thing. We feel the same way today.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was as Pierre said. And
when I bought here, I didn't expect that we'd stay here forever, because I thought of St. Jamestown, east of Yalong, which was redeveloped into high-rise apartments. And already it was starting south of the what is now the Metro store. Right, they've torn down those houses,
and they do have
it's beginning already. So, the plans were to build two tall apartment buildings there,
right here on Robert Street.
Yes, where the playing field is.
Yeah.
And then we got lucky.
So who fought it?
This is one of the reasons when we came that this association was formed. It was a round of protest, it was called Sussex Ulster. And that was the main reason for forming it. And we were lucky because we had Pierre's a planner, and Harry Malcolmson lived here in Robert Street, and he's a lawyer.
On Robert Street. You lived on Robert Street.
I lived south of Harbour, yes. Yeah.
South of Harbour. Okay.
Well, this is just south of Sussex that the Malcolmsons lived. And they moved, I don't know when they moved. Their kids were quite a bit, well, it doesn't matter when they moved. But it was very appropriate because the developer, one of the developer's men, sort of his henchmen in a sense, was somehow or another, I bumped into him in another context entirely, and Beekmans, he says, Beekmans, you aren't related to that man who helped stop the development of Robert Street. And I said, well, yes, he's my husband. He says, he's very smart. But he said, somebody who's only, his down payment on his house was only $1,200. He stopped a $1 million thing going up. He really harangued me. And I felt just a trifle threatened, you know. It was midday, you know, so nobody was, he wasn't going to do anything physical to me, but he was really angry about this. And
were very active in preventing that from happening.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Well, I was involved, I guess.
Quite a number of people were involved.
We should say that we were not the only middle-class professionals in the area. You know, you mentioned Harry Malcolmson, the lawyer on Robert Street, the chairman of the First Residents Association, lived on Robert Street. Yeah. What was his name?
I forget.
But you know who I'm talking about.
I think so, but I can't remember.
He taught at the University of Toronto, and he committed suicide.
Oh, yeah. Paul.
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 His wife goes to your church.
She did. She died there.
She died too. Okay. Yeah, she died. Well, anyway, they lived.
So that was another professional.
It was sprinkled around. It was starting.
Gentrification.
Gentrification.
So you paid $10,000. Your down payment was $1,200 in 1964.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at that time, educated people were in the minority.
Yeah,
I think,
very much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they were.
So. New immigrants could still, this is a kind of place that they could still afford to come in. They'd buy a house like this and they'd have two families in it.
When we bought it, there were two families
in the house.
A lot of people have described that to me. A few families or people who rented rooms. Yeah. There was a lot of that.
Yeah. And it's hard to believe. You know, I grew up in not a wealthy family at all. My father was a United Church minister, and the manses in most places were quite commodious because in years gone by, most people had more kids. And our family was a family of six kids, two of whom were twins, mind you, but still, it was a big family. And I was used to big, drafty old houses weren't very comfortable to live in because they got very cold in winter. But there was room. And when my coming to this small place, I really felt cribbed, cabined and confined. I just thought, this is too small. You know, we're going to have kids. You know, this is just too small. And I've adapted, obviously. I really enjoy our home now, and I have for a long time. Pierre was absolutely right. But it was just, it's interesting what your background does to you. You know, you're used to a big family rattling around a big house, and also people coming in off the street. Oh, my gosh, I don't know how my mother ever stood it, because she was always giving meals to some poor soul who'd had some tragedy or something befall them. I shouldn't laugh, because it isn't funny, but it was funny in a way, because one of my sisters said, "You never know who's going to be here for dinner, Mom. You have no idea who's coming next." And it was true. They were just, my parents were both of them very hospitable people and very concerned about people who were having a tough time or were poor or whatever had happened to them. So that's just the way we lived. So I couldn't imagine that we'd be able to do that in this tiny house.
This must have felt like a shoebox to you.
It did a bit.
Being so narrow.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah.
How wide is your house?
16 feet.
Yeah.
So you know,
considering what you grew up in, this big, wide.
And usually with a lot of, we were in small towns by and large, in Manitoba, and usually they're quite the gardens, and of course that was heaven for my parents, because you would plant your vegetables and can them, and you know, look after your family that way. They were very vigorous.
One difference between those days and now is that poor people can't afford to move in here.
No, I mean the prices now are ridiculous.
They're out in the suburbs, in what Doug Saunders in the Globe and Mail, I don't know if he had an article describing how they are living in slab farms, that is apartment buildings in the suburbs, you know, and they have to commute long, long distance in large numbers. You know, they're no longer in the central area of the city. They just can't afford it.
So you're saying the socioeconomic face of this neighborhood has changed?
Oh, terrific. Totally.
Because
terrific.
Now, at that, in 1964, there were just a few educated people and a lot of immigrants, several families in each home. This could have probably had five people sleeping in these two spaces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the kitchen would have been kept open for eating, but these might have had a curtain in
or whatever.
And people sleeping here. Yeah. Now, you mentioned something about you grew up with growing gardens, whatever, in the back. What do you have behind your house here? And what have you had over there?
A mess. Okay. Pierre sort of likes a wilderness in the back. Uh-huh. We haven't really done the garden thing the way I was used to.
Merlin is in the gardener.
Well, you know, I used to almost...
Yes or no?
As a child, I did. As a child. Yeah. And I used to try and get out of it. I had discovered when we visited a farmer's place that a horse could get blind staggers. It was some sort of thing, you know, some virus it caught or other. And I used to, we had our times when we went out and were weeding the garden. And I complained to my dad. I said, "I think I've got blind staggers." And he said, "Little girls don't get blind staggers, only horses." You got to do your couple of rows of weeding.
So you were, even then, you were not happy to be a gardener.
No, not really.
I feel the same way.
Well, my parents sort of had to. They had these six kids to feed, and they were paid next door to nothing. They were doing God's work, but God was supposed to pay them, I guess. I don't know.
Our garden has gone through three phases, actually.
Front and back? Are we talking about both?
I'm talking about the back.
Okay.
Initially, when we had two children, there was a sand pit in the back there, and I was able to rent a parking space across the street. So the garden the back was not just a parking space.
So the sand pit was for the children to play in.
Yeah, the
wonderful big sand pit. Mm-hmm. Whoa, yes. Okay. So that was the first.
That was the first phase.
Yeah.
Then they grew up. I eventually changed it, and it became my parking space mainly. Mm-hmm. And now more recently, I I no longer drive a car. Mm-hmm. I don't have a car any longer. So it's back to being not a children's play area, but a sort of an attempt at a garden.
It's not a very good vegetable garden, but it's mainly
some flowers.
Vines and flowers, a few flowers.
Yeah.
And then in the front, he tried tremendously.
Our herbs are in there.
Grass to grow again and again and again, and I said, unless we get rid of the tree, which I don't think is a good idea.
I planted that tree.
So I guess between the roots and the shade.
It's in that
particular kind of tree, apparently, that we have. It does things to the soil. Uh-huh. It doesn't allow
grass.
It allow flowers
so
to
we
bloom.
Have, what is it? We have periwinkle in it now, and you know it's quite nice.
Oh, that's good.
When it comes, it gives the little blue flowers. It's very pretty.
So your back was used for children to play in when they were young.
Yes.
What about your front? Did you use the front in any way?
No, they didn't play there. Actually, partly that was my doing, because I was a little worried about them. You know, I couldn't keep tabs on them. And since both our son and daughter, very energetic, very adventuresome kids.
If we had the back, we didn't.
They were quite happy to play in the back.
Children.
They didn't need the front, and we sort of figured that was a good idea, because I didn't want to sort of cage them in, but on the other hand, you can't sit there all day and watch them. And they were outdoors kids, even as babies, you had to take them out every day.
But neither of us are competent gardeners.
No.
So... I guess a garden hasn't been a priority either at the front or the back. Mm-hmm. I do my best, which I guess is about as much as I can say. I experiment with different things.
I'm a similar kind of gardener, so please don't be apologetic. What about the pedestrian traffic on your street? As your children say, when they were 12 or 14, were they playing? Were people sitting in the front? Are people friendly in terms of stopping by? What was there anything happening on the street in the front?
Oh, certainly with the kids. They played ball hockey, you know, the whole business of you have to get off the street when it's a car comes.
Yes.
And there's quite a few cars, but they played assiduously. And then at the time, the university put in the athletic complex over on Sussex, but the rink. They had a rink there, and the kids...
That was very important for our son.
It was wonderful, that
rink. It was terrific.
Rink.
It was just terrific, yeah. And it kept a lot of kids off the streets, I think. You know, it really made a big difference.
I'm sad that it's not... being used now.
I agree.
I think that's a real waste of a good addition, really, to the neighborhood. I don't know why. Well, I guess it's the university cutting back on costs, isn't it? They just don't feel the
want. You think of that ice rink and tennis, and then across the lane from there was some kind of sandy thing.
Yeah, there was a... they had a sort of a volleyball. It was volleyball, and then they took, I don't know whether they actually took the sand out, but they just stopped using it. And I thought that was really bad.
Yeah.
And the field still gets quite a bit of use from UDS. They're over there quite frequently.
Yes.
So that
And
that
they maintain that, but they've
bit,
closed it to the community.
Yes, they have, So, it's a pity.
I think the working class people who lived here did sit on their front porches
much more than we do.
We don't sit on our front porches.
Well, some of their porches are bigger too, you know, for instance.
Yeah, they have bigger porches. It was on both sides, right?
Yeah,
they would sit on the front
and watch
the street.
And people would pass by, and there was talk all the time.
When I first moved to Robert Street, south of Harvard, that was a lot. Italian and Portuguese people would be sitting outside and socializing. I became Italian and Portuguese at that time. I enjoyed it, be sitting outside at 11 o'clock at night, just enjoying conversation. So I know that kind of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jane Jacobs called that sidewalk living, just being outside, enjoying your neighbors.
Yeah.
But the new population,
they don't do that much.
Professionals don't Don't do that. Right?
So that's another one of the changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You talked about Harvard being dusty and shabby, except for Mrs. Peretta's and Harvard Bakery. And so that's another change that you're describing now.
Well, it's a very interesting street now. I think it's just
Harvard.
Harvard.
How do you see Harvard now? How would you describe
it? I find the mix of shops that they have there now is really interesting. Now, admittedly, I haven't shopped there very much. Pierre does most of the grocery shopping in our seat because he's the cook. It sounds as if I do nothing, but that's not true. he retired before I did by 3 or 4 years, maybe even more, 5 years, I guess. So he took, we used to do the meals together. You know, when we got home, we got the dinner together. And then when I was still working, he started doing the meals. And when I retired, I thought, well, we'd go back to sharing meals. And he was very...
Territorial.
Yes, as our daughter-in-law says, she went out to help him one day, and she said, Pierre sort of gives me the impression that he'd rather be in the kitchen on his own.
Is that your piece of territory? Do you like that?
Oh yes, sure. I cook, so. Uh-huh.
He's very good.
Yeah,
they're very good.
You know, things are located where I put them.
Our daughter was here one day when Pierre wasn't, and she was found her standing in the middle of the kitchen saying, "I said, what's the matter, Megan?" And she said, "I'm just trying to imagine where Dad might have put such and such." She was trying to get into his mind because it wasn't in a place that she would have put it. So,
but she's right. It's his kitchen.
It's his kitchen. Yeah.
Would you talk about, please, what you've done to the house? You bought it in 1964. It was run down. What did you do in 1964, and what have you done? This is 2013, many years later. So what have you done through all these years?
Oh, well, when we first
talked about renovations?
Yes.
All kinds of changes, including heating, whatever, pipes, anything. Yeah.
Oh. Well, we did initially a
very quick and dirty
renovation
painting, because it was not only run down, it hadn't been painted for years, but the last people who were in it, I don't know what the story was there, but there was one woman, and there was a variety of kids, and they were black group of people, and the woman looked absolutely totally depressed, and I didn't blame her. You know, I don't know what the story was behind it, but she was in a bad situation, obviously, and she just couldn't keep the house. She couldn't keep the housekeeping done properly, and it was really a depressing place to try and do anything about. And now I have a couple of sisters who were around at the time, and they helped us clean up. It was quite the job. And then we did some painting, some, as Pierre said, just sort of quick painting so that it looks better, because who knows, we may be only be here for about 5 years, you know. So here we are all these years later. And then, of course, at a certain point, we realized that we didn't want to move from here and that we'd be quite happy to live here and in this neighborhood into our old age, which is what we are now, I suppose. Pierre's going to be 80 soon, and I've already turned 80. So that's what we did. And then incrementally we did things, right? You have a better handle on that, you should tell.
We've renovated.
What kind of renovations? Which rooms would you have modified?
Well, when we moved in, there was one toilet that had been added at the back of the kitchen. That was otherwise it was the house from
the standard
the 1880s.
What year was it this house built?
1885
or something like around then.
The row was built in that time, and they were very standard. This area here that we've made into cupboards was a hallway, and these two rooms were divided. You know, they were, you could close. There's some doors, sliding doors, that you could close between them. And I think, as you say, people slept here. The access was through the hallway.
Yeah, you know, these houses, they're all the same basic model. It's a smart design, really.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for it, because even when we came in, it took me years to realize it, but the architect had made sure that there was a window in every room. And that is brilliant. It really is brilliant, because otherwise you'd feel very enclosed.
Yeah, that is very nice.
One of the changes we made when we first moved in was that the front upstairs was divided into two rooms. There are two
small
windows,
yeah,
up there.
There's
right?
Uh-huh. Very small bedrooms.
And one of the bedrooms was about so wide.
Well, if the house is just 16 feet wide,
yeah,
and you had two rooms,
had two,
yeah,
two rooms,
filling,
yeah,
sitting, yeah, into,
so
the 16
we took
feet
out that one wall.
That we did that
to make one bedroom,
yeah,
at the front.
Uh-huh.
That was.
It must have felt very wide after he did.
Two rooms,
yeah.
And then just gradually over the years we did other things. We put on an addition at the back.
One floor, two floors?
Both floors, yeah. Mm-hmm. Extended. The back bedroom was very tiny. Yeah, the mid bedroom was so-so, but the back one was really not adequate, we didn't think. So we pushed right out into the backyard and enlarge the kitchen, and
I'm thinking, you know, what we call Megan's room, the middle room here. Mm-hmm. When we moved in, that was probably the largest
bedroom. Yeah, it probably was.
Because the front was divided into two.
Yeah, but we got rid of the
back bedroom. Was just quite narrow,
yeah,
across.
Yeah.
And now it's the smallest bedroom in the house,
yeah,
because we've
widened everything,
enlarged
else.
The second floor at the we've got, you know, a reasonable sized room at the back there, and the front, yeah, is also a,
and we did things room. With we had to do things with, I remember the first year we were here we realized the heating system was just not up to scratch, the drape in our room at the front would move in the, you know, the windows weren't tight, and also the heating was just not adequate at all. And we had this infant, you know, born shortly after we moved in. And of course, I was very nest involved at that point. I was really sort of, I thought I was a tough lady. I wouldn't get all upset about a baby, but I didn't like this wind flowing in. So we had to change the heating, and was it coal to begin with, or we did get gas eventually. I don't remember exactly when we bought the house, I don't know what it was,
but one of the things we've done is deepen
the basement, yeah,
the part in the front of the house.
Yeah,
I left the back that's under the kitchen the way it was, where I can't stand up straight totally.
Yeah, I'm familiar with
those.
So you went down deeper.
Yeah. And we were going to do all sorts of exciting things with it, but unfortunately when they were going down they hit water. They hit a little stream, apparently a rivulet from the Tattle Creek. Hit a little, you know. Anyway, it wasn't. It hasn't given us problems really, but they did cement
there's space there,
a storage space. But we were thinking of a den, you know, and that kind of thing. But it just probably would not be wise. You'd have damp or get into whatever.
What a story! You hit the creek.
Well, it came through somewhere around here.
Yeah,
so we, you know, I say that the Tattle Creek went through our basement. Whether that's actually
correct.
Correct, precise, I don't know.
But it makes us all smile.
Yeah, it does.
And at some point we had stairs go down to the basement, into the basement.
Right from here.
Yeah, right.
Outside.
No, outside. You go outside down, you can get into the basement. It's helpful with storage and whatnot, because the stairwell here is very narrow, mm-hmm, as they are in most of these houses. And so this is a way to get in with something that's bigger that's could be difficult. We haven't used it that much, so have we, when I think...
What?
That stairway.
Occasionally it can be very useful.
It can.
To get something into the basement.
Then our neighbor is... Poor man.
It's very awkward to, you know, even a bicycle to bring it through and down those steps inside the house. So that... That can be useful.
Yeah, it can be very useful. But it looks a little messy out there without... because our neighbor is, he's a very nice man, but he's got problems. I don't know what they are. He's a carpenter by trade, and
he's one of the few who's not a middle class professional.
Yeah. He's a very, very nice man, very helpful. But oh gosh, you can see the siding there. That siding has been there for about 3 years. He hasn't done anything.
So he starts things and never completes
them.
You always look as if you're working in a work, living in a work zone.
Yeah. It does.
He's nice. He, you know, he clears the snow for us in the front.
He's a very nice
person,
man,
but he has a problem.
did you put air conditioning into your home?
Yes.
When would you have done that?
That was quite a while ago, I think. We had one particularly hot summer, and after that you said we got to do something about it.
Well, we had a window air conditioner before, it's interior. We've had three air conditioning systems over the years, and they didn't work properly. And finally, I think the last time.
We must have had it for about 20 years. Would you say 20 years?
The one we have now?
Yeah. Well, not the one we have now, but our air conditioning attempts.
Yeah, I've been very frustrated because we spend money on whole house air conditioning worked very poorly.
So you spend the money and do all that work and have them intruding in your life, and
the third time
it's worked. I think they've learned how to cope with flat roofs. That's what they said was the problem upstairs, you know. And one of the reasons you want air conditioning is for the sleeping, of course. And if it's not working there, it's not. Of course, you can always...
Well, the rooms underneath a flat roof get very hot.
Well, and especially as you go up, it gets hotter and hotter.
Yeah.
You know, as you're walking up the stairs, you can
usually
feel that change.
I'm
coming back to the stores again. Is there anything interesting through the years that has changed on Bloor Street, on College Street?
Oh, College Street, we're not that familiar with.
We don't
do much on College Street. But Bloor
Street... Except the computer stores, I noticed that.
Bloor Street, yes, there's... I think the old Dominion that they had is now the Metro. The Metro has a little bit of the, to my mind, a bit of the French in it. You know, it's a French company, apparently, that runs it. And they seem to have moved with the times about things that they provide. So, and there used to be, remember the Elizabeth Delicatessen on Bloor Street? Do you remember that?
Hungarian?
Yes.
And
yeah, it
just
there was a Hungarian. It's more strongly Hungarian than it is now. That strip of Bloor Street, right?
Yeah, there were several Hungarian stores, I think.
There was a big Hungarian restaurant on the.
There's
where
one
the bookstore is
country
now.
Style is still there, but I think all the others are gone.
They're gone, yeah. They,
okay, they, so they one were, is the Hungarian influence.
Yeah, there was... and they had a lot of very, very good spiced meats and that kind of thing. I used to go there, but they looked at you very disdainfully, I felt. They felt that they were Hungarian and you weren't, and you didn't know what you were, but they didn't care what you were. It was sort of... You had to be... You had to have your ego quite high when you went in there, because otherwise they'd make you feel that they were doing you such a favor to sell you this. Most of the time it was quite expensive. I didn't go that often because I thought it was too expensive.
That one particular Hungarian store.
It was that one. And I think there, you know, we've known other Hungarians in our life.
It was quite a high class Hungarian.
Yes, it was.
Hungarians would come in from...
All over the place, because they would provide things that these people
sort
knew.
Sort of like the Harbin Bakery, where the Jewish people still come back and get their stuff from the Harbin Bakery.
For the Jewish holidays, they're always there, even now. They go there all
the
time.
Oh, they really line up around some of the holidays.
Because it's a joy, that place. It really is. We get such a kick out of Rafi, too. Do you know Rafi?
Oh, he's a good friend of mine.
Is he?
He was just a young fellow, and when we moved in, he went to university, got a degree, and then decided that he'd take the bakery.
I think first he went off to New York and did a sociology degree there, and eventually came into the bakery. He didn't do it too quickly, but he's certainly been in charge for a long time.
Yes,
with Susie, his sister.
So did you know the parents there?
Oh, well, I knew Goldie.
Goldie, yeah.
I didn't know Albert.
I didn't know the father there.
Yeah. And he worked in the back anyway, but
yes,
I never met him.
Yeah. Yeah. But Goldie was quite something, too.
Oh, yes.
She was really... I enjoyed her a lot. And Rafi, we've... And Susan is such a nice person. She is just so nice, isn't she?
Yeah.
She just...
I agree. Anything else about Bloor Street? You talked about the Hungarian restaurant.
The Hungarian restaurant, and what were some of the other places that were along there?
The banks have gone.
Some of the banks have gone. Yeah, there were several
except
banks.
Except one. I guess there's still one on Bathurst on the north side there.
Yeah, there is. The bookstores that came along. I really like the Book City.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
isn't it something?
Yeah.
And it's been here for quite a while now. And it started, it was, he was a very canny businessman. I think he started sort of slowly, you know, and built up his collection. And it's really good now. It's just
And so far he's staying afloat. A lot of bookstores aren't because of the big bookstores.
I've
been rather disappointed in that strip of Bloor Street. I guess it still caters to the student population a lot.
Yeah, there's
cheap food. You know, the good restaurants are on Harvard Street.
Yes, yeah. Interesting that that's happened.
It's interesting. That's happened because And what's the name of the paper place or where they do printing and whatnot?
Madoko.
They're good. They have a lot of stuff that anytime, almost any odd thing I want, I can find there. And they're a friendly group of people, too. And then what's the place on Robert and Bloor on the south side?
Kinko, yeah.
Kinko has been, it's been there in some manifestation for quite some time now, and they're good about moving with the times, too.
You remember what was there before, though?
What was there?
The medical...
Yeah, that's right, that medical place.
They moved to Bathurst and DuPont?
Yes, they did. It was a pharmacy, and that was another story that was...
Starkman's.
Yeah, it was there in that corner. And it was really a very interesting place because some of the people who were the servers, it took me a long time to figure out, and finally somebody was able to tell me, they were pleasant enough people, but they looked frightened. And I thought, I don't think I'm that intimidating. Why do they look so frightened all the time? They were perfectly polite. And I was always polite with them. And I mentioned this to somebody else. He said, oh, didn't you know, most of those people had been in the camps. And they were highly educated. They were pharmacists, you know, and whatnot. And I just that really broke my heart, you know, in a way. But then I said to myself, well, good for them, you know, they're functioning, they're doing a good job.
But you saw that there was some damage or something.
Yeah, and at first I thought maybe I am being too, you know, I would like this, please, or something. Maybe I was too forthright in my request. I didn't know. But one day, one of my kids, I forget whether it was Ivan or Megan, she was just a baby in arms. She had a monumental pee, and she peed all over their floor. You know, she had a diaper on, but... And they were so nice about it.
I
remember. They were so nice. I was just... Never happened before or after, you know, that it just... sometimes you... I would never, and our daughter looked surprised too. Very surprised. You know, I was holding her in my arm, and she just
saturated her diaper.
Talking about Megan.
Yeah.
Oh.
When she was just a little kid.
You know, you said something that is becoming clear to me, that wherever people have lived between Bloor and College, that's the area they know the best. Because when I asked you, I said, what about Bloor or College? You said, that was too far.
Yeah.
So people will know, you know, Sussex, Harvard, and Bloor, but College was not quite your neighborhood.
No.
Yeah. What about
yeah, I cycle down to the Kensington Market all the time, though.
You just anticipated where I was going. Exactly. That's where that was my next question because of Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What about Kensington Market?
Yeah, he goes there all the time. Yeah.
He goes there now all the time.
Yeah, that's why I asked you to come in at 9:30, so that when this is over, I'll have time to go down to the market.
What do you do in the market? How do you use it, and how have you used it through all these decades?
Yeah, well, he's gone there all the time ever since we came here.
Yeah, yeah. I shop around, and I'm. I notice it's changing. There are more expensive places like Sanagan's, the meat place that has now gone into where the European, whatever they call them, European butcher, that big place, you know the one?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's now a more upscale meat place. And I go to Hooked, the fish store, which is new. I go into all the different fruit and vegetable places, and where is it? I get.
You get grains.
House of spice for.
The grains and spices. And,
how often do you go to the market? Average.
Twice a week, at least. Because on the bike it's quite convenient, you know.
Of course.
So you have to walk all from here. It's quite.
So you have some good baskets on your bike.
Yes, he does.
Oh yes, bike. I insist on that.
So the market is a big part of your life and has been since 1964.
Yeah.
I don't know about since 1964 because I was working. I don't know how much I went down there in those days. Certainly since I've retired, and that's 20 years now. It will be.
Uh-huh. So you retired fairly young.
Yeah,
60.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I mean, I was working. I couldn't do what I do now, right?
That's true. I suppose we didn't go down there.
No.
You said you don't have a car. You used to have a car?
Yes. No,
we did. Yeah. Merlin has never driven.
I have an eye problem. I don't see properly to drive.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. When did you stop using a car?
I would think about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say 5 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Because you gave it to, or you sold it for very little money to
I, my eyesight is declining, and I found that driving was tiring. It would exhaust me as I got older. Mm-hmm. This was becoming clearer and clearer. And since we live here, and since I get around on a bicycle, I said, I was finding that the bike, the car was sitting in the backyard. Sometimes the whole week or two or three weeks would go by, and I wouldn't use it. So I said, why spend money on a car? I mean,
we take cabs.
I only own 3 cars in the whole.
So they had a long life.
I've been an adult. Yes. Yeah.
Because generally, he's worked within biking range.
I worked a lot of the time at College and Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So I even would come and have lunch with my family.
Kids would come from here in Street School and they went there.
That was unusual, I guess.
Yeah,
I could do that.
How have the streets changed? In terms of direction of traffic and flow of traffic.
That was an issue at one point because the maze was created by Richard Gilbert knows all about the maze and he and Pierre put their heads together and because
there used to be one way all the way down to college,
yeah.
Right?
And people
one,
were
one
using
way
it
south,
like
and the other one,
they were,
one way
they're speeding.
So people would use it as a shortcut. And that's why the maze was created.
Because so you and Richard worked on that together.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. And we were concerned there were a lot of children in the area, mm-hmm. and we just thought, gosh, this is
dangerous. I did it. I guess I supported it on principle, although I realized that what it means is that people would, since they couldn't go all the way down, there'd be more traffic
on our street.
On this stretch. A street than on than that.
But it was better than them because they were going way too fast.
Yes,
they went. Way
one of the
too
reasons
fast.
I bought the house here was I say, oh, it's a quiet street. You know, it doesn't go very far. It's a quiet street.
Until you change. Thank you very much.
They can't speed along here.
Yeah, but
there's more traffic as a result of the maze than on this part.
I thought it was very, I guess Richard, I think he was counselor at the time, wasn't
yeah.
he? I think he was.
It was one of his.
One of his, and he did a really good job of interests. Pushing it through. And I was very grateful as a mother because kids who have to be outdoors all the time, as ours were, it was a worry. You know.
This was probably one of the very first of these local mazes. I think yeah. it's been copied
yes.
Elsewhere.
Yeah, and they caused a lot of difficulty in some areas. Remember, there was a big to-do in the papers about the one in North Toronto that they set up, and it was rather interesting because we'd got our thing through without any trouble. And the people in North Toronto, there was quite a group who didn't want the maze there, and that became a real.
Well, but I could just see somebody's at Bloor and they're racing down to college.
Yes.
I have had, in my interviews, I've listened to people talk about how it improved for the young families.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's come up in the interviews when we've talked about roads.
Interesting, that's interesting.
Yes, it has.
Very interesting.
For people who've been here a long time and
yeah,
their children
were
the ages of your children.
Yeah.
So they would say thank you very much. Yeah. I didn't know that you had been part. I had heard Richard's name. I hadn't heard your name.
Oh, well, he's the prime mover,
he was
I think.
But you helped him because you knew things about traffic plans and whatnot. That wasn't.
But I guess I was on the Residents Association.
Oh, were you?
Oh, yeah. I was president at one point.
Right, yeah.
When was that? Do you have some idea?
Early on. The late 60s.
Late 60s, I would think. And then,
wasn't particularly active after that initial concern about
the buildings,
high-rise apartments.
Yeah. So it was formed really to stop that from happening.
Yeah, that was formed,
and you became very strong at that time.
Yeah.
Because you had a real focus.
And then for a while there wasn't...
An issue,
there
wasn't, really.
There weren't many issues and... Like, I guess in my time it got rather
quiet,
not inactive, not yeah. totally inactive, but I think it has become much more active in recent years.
Yeah, it's much like the annex repairs. Yeah. You know, it's a very very organized group, yeah. and ours isn't quite so organized. But it's come back, I think, and it's from the beginnings that. Yeah. And it was interesting because I think sometimes the politicians and whoever and the developers felt that this area was largely immigrant, and so they could just push people around. You know, that unfortunately that's what some developers think they can do, and they were very annoyed. Like this one man who talked to me, that he says, "You got this lawyer, got this town planner there. You know, they're making a mess of things, and
for
making
some.
The people who wanted to build there, it was, and that sort of upset me because I thought that's not fair to the immigrants, you know, to just sort of dismiss them as their views are not necessary.
No, they believed that this was progress.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
they could
well,
build these nice clean apartment buildings instead of
all these tiny little houses.
Old houses. Yeah.
Well, if that's progress, we're still fighting progress. We are.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we're very active. That's certainly an issue for us today.
Yeah.
In 2013.
But they're starting to understand that, it isn't necessarily a socially ideal form of housing, at all.
No.
So, just as a totally car-oriented society is not something we should be promoting.
Well, living without a car, because of where all of us live, I think can be easy and not a hardship. And if you take taxis, not expensive.
That's one of the things I thought when I got rid of the car. You save so much money not having a car that you can afford quite a few taxis.
Yeah. And we do,
and
a lot
it's still
of
less expensive.
Yeah. We do a lot of walking, and I think we always have done quite a bit of walking.
Yeah,
and,
you do.
you do.
I save energy by cycling.
What can you say about, through the years, about the safety of this neighborhood?
Oh, I find it very safe, and through the years. I've never been worried about being out at a meeting and coming home. Of course, most of the meetings are fairly close by, so maybe that has something to do with it. But I've never, that has never worried me at all.
Mm-hmm. So.
And sometimes people worry about their kids. Now, I must admit that since our kids had to cross Spadina, for several years I went and collected them at noon and took them back and picked them up after school. And we walked, you know, because I don't drive. But I was never worried about anybody doing anything to my kids. And I think maybe that has changed a lot now, because there have been a lot of, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but there have been incidents of kids being picked up and put in a car and taken away and abused or whatever. But I never felt that about my kids. And my kids, at a certain stage, they felt they were able to do the necessary on their own, and they wanted to be independent. Mm-hmm. And so I just made sure that they did not try to cross when the light was red. Mm-hmm. This was, and I pointed out to our son in particular, because he just thought that everybody saw him, and I had to take him and show him a truck. I said, a truck cannot see you there on the corner. You know, you have to make absolutely sure that the truck has stopped before you go. And he got that. Most of the time he just thought, well, everybody knows me in the neighborhood, so they'll stop me.
That's not so simple as that.
He's a kind of kid who talked to everybody. And that was a bit of a worry, because he talked to everybody. But no, they. I don't think they felt unsafe. Do you? Our kids?
No.
And you too.
No.
If you're looking for sources of conflict, I think there is the conflict between the young people who live here, young students, and some of them aren't necessarily students, but
anymore.
Young people who are not a family group, and the rest of us. That is a problem. They have different priorities, different interests. They like to party.
We've had some big parties.
I don't know if any of the other people you've talked to have mentioned that kind of thing.
Yes, and I've lived with it too.
You experience it, yes.
Absolutely, for sure, yeah.
We have a house next door, which has been owned by somebody who lives in Hong Kong for a long time. And a company, they hire somebody to manage it. And that company is based somewhere north of Steeles, Richmond Hill.
They never come down.
They don't. We've had a series over the years since that Italian family moved out long 30 years ago. They were lovely, just wonderful. Having the girls came and babysit our kids right next door with the mother as a backup.
You had two generations of babysitters.
We got along very well with them. But since then, we've had
30 years of that.
Well, it's
had one place with the drug addicts, young people.
And that was bad news. We had to move on that. It took me a long time to realize.
They trashed the place when they left.
Somehow
I think had an effect on the company. They said they had to spend a lot of money fixing it up.
Apparently we've had several good people. Good groups recently. They've been pretty good.
Yeah. Well, it's the same. Yeah. Group that's been changing their musicians.
They
practice in the basement next door, and sometimes it can be quite loud,
but not very often. They're much, much better than they used to be.
But you have had 3 decades of people moving in and out and not really caring about the property or the neighborhood. And especially the next door neighbors.
That can be, it's had its moments when it wasn't so good. One time our daughter was staying over here, and she's quite a commanding personality. She's about 5'9", and she has a sense of self that people respond to. She went over at about 3 a.m. one day, and she said, "Listen, I'm close to your age, and this is ridiculous. You can't expect people in the neighborhood," because people on Robert Street were hearing them too. The noise was just horrific.
And they had a big party, and then it was crashed
by other people.
They didn't even know.
But the interesting thing was, as soon as she said that, they just closed down immediately. And they took off. Wow, I'm going to phone Megan. She lives...
She lives at Lippincott.
I'll phone her if I run into
south
trouble.
Of Harvard.
Oh, so near me.
Yes. You live on Lippincott?
I live on Borden, south of Harvard.
So it's been an interesting experience. And sometimes, actually, we got to like some of the kids who live next door.
They're basically nice, fortunately.
You can talk to them, and they are reasonable. But we had some, that drug scene. I couldn't imagine how stupid I was, because the lady on the corner, Linda, figured out right away. And she sent her husband, Danny, over to say, "We've got to do something. This is a drug..."
It was hard to know who actually lives here.
Couldn't find out who was, and they all just looked zonked. And why I didn't think that it was so, we called the authorities, and they did take them out. And it's sad in a way, but
Before that, we had a couple of high class prostitutes from Eastern Europe, I think.
They were quiet.
They just get in a taxi and go off.
They didn't work here.
They were Russian. Yeah, that was quite funny. One of them came over one day and asked if we had a rake. She wanted to do something with the garden in the front, which she produced the rake, and she did her bit, and there we were. It's been quite the story, the house next door. It's
just a little more interesting than you bargained for.
Yeah, well, the noise at times was, that can be.
Francis, on the other, he can be quite noisy. He suddenly decides to get moving and do something.
So you hear banging.
Sit down to dinner. That's right.
Bang.
The walls aren't that thick here, So we do hear our neighbors. But we get used to it.
It's interesting, and there's an interesting group of people who live along here. We don't know all of them anymore. There's one house that's still vacant there, Raj's house. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happened there at all. I think they sold it, and then
always tell where young, when it's talking about young people and the others, you can always tell where the young people are living. It's the ones who are in good health and robust and who could clean clear off the snow, but they're the ones who don't, right?
It's not anybody's job.
You go walk along the sidewalk, there's a place that hasn't been cleared. A bunch of students in there.
So is this a block where you've gotten to know your neighbors?
Quite a number of them. Yeah. Yes, we know the Barnetts. Do you know Barnetts?
They've been here a long time. I interviewed them.
Not as long as we have, but they've been here for a long time. And our kids babysat their kids. In fact, Anna said one day they came home, they'd been out later than they expected, and Megan was babysitting, and she was zonked out on the couch. Aww. And she was a teenager, and I was 16, 17 or something like that, and Anna looked down at her and said to Bob, she said, "She looks so young, and we've left our kids with her." I said, "Well, you know, she would have done something." And she said, I know, you know, she was perfectly capable of waking up and doing the necessary for our kids, but she was just appalled at how young she looked when she was asleep there. Right. So, yeah,
it's known them. Not quite as long as you, but I know that when they bought their house, it was the same attitude, that it's a slummy neighborhood.
Well, one of my sisters who lives in Thornhill, she called it outright a slum. She was very annoyed with us, and she's had to change her tune. She did apologize a few years ago. She says it really is an interesting neighborhood now.
But she wasn't so far off at that time.
No, she wasn't. Yeah. But it was a little unkind.
Yeah.
I thought that was not really.
Even if you thought it, you were moving here.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
Well, when we moved in here, I think that was the majority opinion, you know, with it. Why aren't you out in the suburbs? Can't you afford it, you know?
When I first came to Toronto very briefly, that was 1968, I lived on Robert Street just north of Harvard. I had one baby at the time and pregnant with a second, but we rented the second floor. The landlord lived on the first floor. And then we rented out the third floor. That was 151 or something like that. But I know my mother visited from Montreal. And I could just see her feeling, what is my daughter doing here? She had that same perception.
It was very common in those days.
Yes,
but all of us love it, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, we're still here. Yeah. You know, it's why we're still here. We know people.
I want to ask two other things. What about institutions, schools, and churches and synagogues?
Schools, we were very pleased with Urin Street School when our children went there. They were very, very good with them. They both went, they didn't both go to the same high school. Our son decided to go to Northern Secondary. Mm-hmm. They had a program there that he thought he would enjoy, and he did. He had a good time in high school, and our daughter went to Jarvis, and it was a very good place too. I think they did a good job. They both went on to university. Ivan went to Waterloo, and Megan went to McGill.
So you lived right, you know, from the University of Toronto.
Funny story about that. Our son Ivan, he's always known the area. Over that the other side of Spadina, it's U of T. It's didn't realize that was University of Toronto.
It's just
U of T.
He's an interesting type in many ways. He's learned a lot since then, hasn't he? But he has this attitude about places that he likes. He really, really likes them, and they've been lucky that way, and they've made friends with people who grew up in the area too. Some of those very long term friends. Megan in particular, our daughter, she has several friends that she met in kindergarten at Huron Street School, she's still got them. You know,
now Megan's living on Lippincott.
Yeah.
Where's Ivan living?
Bangkok.
One extreme and the other.
And she's wonderful. She's been, I have some older sisters who are not well at all. They're very frail and whatnot, and she's been helping out tremendously with them. And we miss our son a lot, but what he wanted to do was teach computers, you know, be the computer person in a school. And they were cutting back on all that kind of thing here in Toronto. So he spent 5 years in Mexico at a private school there in Monterey. And then he was seven.
He was on Baffin Island first.
Oh yeah, Baffin Island. That's the only place in Canada where he could get a teaching
job. Canada,
when he graduated
yeah.
from. Yeah, it was unbelievable. He was in Cape Dorset for 2 years. And then it was still the same situation. There were just no jobs for teachers. So he said, okay, you know, and he ended up going to Monterey, Mexico, and then he went to Beijing for 7 years. Mm. And now he's in Bangkok. He's been there 3 years? I guess he's in his fourth year.
So teachers at international schools.
Yes, and they have this thing there. They have exactly what he wants. He's the computer person for the school, and he teaches all. He likes the variety in the ages of the kids that he teaches. It's usually he's usually in a K to 9 school, but sometimes it's K to 10 or something like that. It just depends on the. On the and he likes the variety of the ages and the you know he's very good.
What language is he speaking
there? In English.
He's speaking in English.
And he's married and he has two little boys. Uh-huh. So they come home every June.
We see them soon in June.
Yeah.
We see them on Skype now.
Yeah, on Skype, and Skype is really valuable. You can see the younger one is. Just over a year, and boy, every week they change when they're that age.
Thank goodness for Skype.
Yeah. Do you use it too?
Well, one of my sons lives in San Diego. He has two children. Another lives in Montreal. He has four children.
Wow.
So, well, I go to Montreal every two months. But yes, Skype is fabulous.
Yeah, it really makes a difference too.
Boy, your son loves the world.
Well, I guess so. He just...
He worked when he first got married a few years ago. He worked at
Branksome Hall.
Branksome Hall.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. He taught there for a couple of years. Yeah.
In the junior school.
Yeah.
But he was working so hard there. He said he had preparing stuff, and he didn't get to see his family much.
Yeah. It, they really that's a known thing about the private schools. If you're a teacher there, it's your life. And he just figured that this was ridiculous, you know. Also,
now that's not true in these international schools.
No, it's not.
Talking
no.
about
mm-hmm. We're talking about
schools.
The private schools.
So he took his life back.
Yeah, and he just found it overwhelming, you know. And he enjoyed it in a way, you know. The kids were good, and he was the only male teacher in the lower school at Branksome Hall. Yeah, it's Branksome Hall. I always keep forgetting which one it was. And they were just absolutely thrilled, these girls, to have this male teacher. It was quite funny.
So, churches.
Oh, churches. Oh, yeah. I'm an active member. I have to confess my sins. I'm an active member of Trinity St. Paul's United Church, which is a very, very interesting place. You'd laugh at this. At Easter service, every Sunday, our ministers ask if there's any people here for the first time, you know. And of course Easter Sunday is quite the day, because that's when it used to be the ladies got their Easter hats and went to church one time a year, maybe at Christmas as well, but you know how people are. Anyway, this one young man stood up and he said, actually I'm usually an Anglican. Everybody laughed. We couldn't help it, and our ministers are really, really good. And Hans Vandy, one of our ministers, said, oh, he said, that's perfectly acceptable. We have everything here. And it's true, you know, Muslims come now and then.
This one on Bloor Street?
Yeah, on Bloor Street.
Oh, it's right on the block here.
It's the Tafel Music Church, too.
I know. It has so many other programs in it, too.
I now and then boast about this, because I think people should know, if it weren't for Trinity St. Paul's Church, Tafel Music probably wouldn't exist. Because when they were trying to get their thing together, the woman who plays the big bass, Allison McKay, or Mackay, I guess she pronounces it, she and her husband are members of our church, and they couldn't find a venue that they could afford, you know, to get going. And these musicians are just brilliant. They're all soulless, you know. They're terrific. Anyway, she came to the church and she said, you know, we can afford to pay you something that's almost an honorarium for a while here. could we possibly use a facility? Well, we had meetings. One thing about the United Church is not good. You have a million meetings, subcommittees all over the place. But we finally got to the stage where we were going to vote whether we were going to do this or not. And everybody was ready to vote yes. And then one of the elder gentlemen said, just a minute. And his brother said, oh, for Pete's sake, George, we've had a million meetings and we're going to vote now. No more just a minute. And so anyway, we voted to have them come and use the facility, and the rest is history. And I think that's the kind of community they are. Somebody has a problem, you know, if they can manage to accommodate or help in any way, they do. And the individuals, I'm still meeting people there. I've been going to that church for a good 35 years. I'm still meeting people there who were there when I started. And I didn't realize they were doing things out in the community that are just so incredible. One woman did Meals for Wheels for 40 years, if you can imagine it. And I just found that out not very long ago. And it's they're that kind of community. They just are amazing.
I know sometimes when I'm walking on Bloor in the evening, if I've had dinner with friends, I'm walking. And I think they have AA meetings. I know there are a variety of kinds, because I see people outside taking a coffee break or having a cigarette, and then they go back in. I know it's a real community center.
It's an amazing place.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
Amazing place.
Yeah.
Some people aren't, but...
When people ask me where I live, I say halfway between Tafel Music and the Harvard Bakery. The perfect location.
It is a very good description. Yeah.
They look a little puzzled.
Those of us who live there wouldn't be.
I usually have to explain some more. But.
Yeah, it is. It is. As I say, it's one of the things that keeps me going. You know, the fact
she sings in the choir.
I sing in the choir. As well, and we have a wonderful choir director, and the music there is terrific. He does all kinds of music. His background is Mennonite, but believe me, we sing African chants, we sing Indian things. He's just really amazing, and a lot of Bach, and I love Bach. So it's a great place.
I agree with you. As whatever I know, and I'm sure I just know the tip of the iceberg, I know it's a wonderful, wonderful institution and a kind place and a generous place.
It wasn't always, you know, it wasn't always. It started to change just around the time we moved in here. They had and this happens in any religion, I guess, they had a minister there who was very, very rigid about everything, about Christianity or whatever, and he was there for 25, 30 years, and they finally, the congregation, who, you know, he wouldn't go for anything about doing anything in the community or talking to the Catholics on Bathurst Street or wherever, the Jews on Spadina there, you know, he wasn't interested in doing anything like that, and the congregation was. So they asked him to leave. They really asked him to leave. And then we got some very, very good people since I've been there, we've had only one person who wasn't really, really good. The other said the ministerial staff has just been amazing, absolutely amazing.
So it's the place has kind of opened its doors and its heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're part of that.
Yeah, and that's the way I think we should be. You know, my father was a minister, as I was telling you, and that's the way he was. My gosh, you know, didn't matter what you were. He used to go, and they used to think it was very funny. In one community, we had a lot of Belgian farmers who'd come as immigrants, and my dad was a farmer's son. And so he would, when he was tooling around in his car going someplace or other, and he saw one man, usually a Belgian, struggling with something he was doing in the field, he always had his overalls and his work boots in the car, and he'd put them on and go and give these people a hand, so that most of the Catholic community knew him really well. And, you know, and he wasn't proselytizing, he was just helping them out for an hour.
So you grew up seeing the church as something much more than just come and pray wear your best clothes.
Oh, yes.
And that's what your church is doing now, and you're part of that.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Yeah,
so that's an important place for you, but it's an important place for many people. Well, not only in the neighborhood, but in the city.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's because it has such a range. You know, there's more PhDs in that congregation. And I'm always finding out another one that I didn't know about. You know, most of them are very bright, but they're also very kind and concerned about their society. So,
that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to ask more questions, but I'm wondering, when you knew that I was coming today, were there any subjects or stories, was there anything you were thinking you would like to share with me while we were talking about the neighborhood and your having lived here for half a century?
I think I've brought a couple of things up while we were talking, right, thought of. You thought we might have photographs, but we didn't find anything.
Well, we had our upstairs bathroom redone, and we had to move things around for the workmen to work. And
I don't know what photographs you...
Well, I just thought we had some photographs of events that we had, you know, sort of picnics on occasion, things like that. But that's a long way back, and maybe they got tossed. I don't know.
They've done that more recently.
Well, if you come up with any of these pictures, call me, because what I was doing in the past is I came with my camera and took pictures of the pictures. But Richard is going around with a scanner. So if you discover anything, get in touch with me or with Richard.
Because remember that time I took Ivan as a baby down to City Hall with Morris Fine?
Oh, yes.
To protest something or other, and it was really funny because we wanted a parquet at Ulster and what's that little parquet? It's Brunswick and Ulster.
It's named after the woman.
That woman,
Margaret Fairley.
Margaret Fairley. Uh-huh. Anyway, we wanted a park, and somebody got the notion that we needed to go down. And at that point, I was at home, and our son was, I think he was about a year or something. And Morris, for some reason, had a free day. I don't know what. Anyway, he's, you know the Fines? Morris Fine on Brunswick?
Right across from Rose Schwartz there.
Should I meet him? Has he been here for a long time?
Yeah, he has been here for a long time.
Yeah.
I'll check him out.
He's sort of a curmudgeonly, curmudgeon urban planner. A little bit. Anyway, he and Ivan went down, and they were saying ridiculous things. The counselor was saying, well, you know, there aren't any children in that area. And Ivan, he was a funny baby in many ways. He'd go, ho, 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 you know. And it became hilarious. You know, he didn't have any hair at that point. His hair came in later. But he kept making sort of almost Bronx cheers, you know, whenever anybody said a negative thing about the park.
It was as if
until
you were...
became it, yeah. And I wasn't, and it changed the whole atmosphere, you know. And they actually made the little parquet, the Margaret Fairley.
Yeah, that was an early achievement.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
But it was such a, you know, I mean, and Morris said to me, "You got some kid there, Merlin."
So he was your best ally that day.
He was. He's a people person, and he has been ever since he was an infant.
That's right.
He just, he'll talk to anybody, anywhere, anytime, and enjoy their stories, you know.
That's what he's doing in so many different places.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Well, to Merlin and Pierre, thank you very much.
You've talked
a lot, wonderful stories. And you're talking about a span of so many years, so it's been very valuable. Thank you very much.
Well,
if you think of anything else that you might like to ask us on occasion, you know, that your mind just thinks, hey, you know, what about that? Did you have anything to do with that? Feel free to give us a call.
I'm going to turn this off.